Illinois faces some big challenges. Today, you're about to hear a truly honest analysis of the problems we face. Equally important, you'll also hear an in-depth discussion of some practical solutions. This is your radio source for stories, insight, and the answers you won't hear anywhere else. Not in the media, and not coming from Springfield. You're listening to Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute. Now, here's your host, Dan Proft.
Dan Proft, thank you for joining us on another edition of Illinois Rising. My co-host today, Austin Berg, a writer for the Illinois Policy Institute. Austin, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Dan.
And boy, the buzz this week has been about this Mike Madigan documentary that will be forthcoming in the month of October, a trailer release that has generated north of 1 million views already. And this is something that you were intimately involved in, Austin.
Yeah, I sure was. So I worked as a writer and a consultant on the film. Illinois Policy Action produced it. And we did so because there was overwhelming demand from our audience at Illinois Policy Institute. No matter which policy issues we touched, people's number one question would be, what do I do about Mike Madigan? How did he get this power? How has he stayed in power so long? What can we do about it? So this documentary sort of explores, gives an anatomy of that power and his rise to it. And I think answers some important questions that people have had for a long time in Illinois.
And the documentary was produced by Emergent Order. Joining us now, one of the producers of the documentary from Emergent Order, Taryn Fogel. Taryn, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So,
Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good. So take us through the kind of documentary process in terms of how you identified the subject of Mike Madigan and then the kind of the exploration of putting together a story about Mike Madigan, the title of the documentary, Madigan, Power, Privilege, Politics.
Well, actually, we were approached by the Illinois Policy Institute by Ryan Green and John Tillman, and they approached John Popola from Emergent Order and myself to work on the documentary. At first, we were a little hesitant about it because we really aren't a company that does a lot of political documentaries. We've done quite a few documentaries that have been socially motivated, but not politically. So when we got this, we really did a lot of research on Michael Madigan. And what really drew us to it was how fascinating he is as a character, his history.
Taryn, I was really thankful, actually, that so Emergent Order is based in Austin, Texas. And we actually approached three different production houses in Illinois. We got really far in talks, and at the last minute they would back out because they were scared to do this documentary. It wasn't because of it wasn't anything but fear of revenge for doing this documentary, but it actually turned out to be really interesting to work with someone on the outside of this process because it's become such the norm in Illinois, and that's scary. And Taryn, I'd just be interested, as someone outside of Illinois, what do you think the most surprising thing will be to people who haven't grown up in this political culture? What will be the most surprising thing to people who watch this film who don't live in Illinois?
For me, I think anybody who's watching who's interested in politics is going to be surprised to find out that somebody has been able to control the seat and been in government this long and has been part of so many scandals and still is controlling that seat. I mean, it's not as something what I found so clear was how overtly all this information is available and people are aware of all these scandals and how Michael Madigan has been tied up into them. But for whatever reason, you've had three governors that have gone to prison, but Michael Madigan seems to be Teflon.
Right. And it's interesting because the story has implications beyond Illinois. And the implication is here's a political culture in the state of Illinois that you arguably was exported to D.C. when Chicago native Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. And in back at home, you have this gentleman, Mike Madigan, who's the longest serving House Speaker in the history at the state level in the history of our country. And so,
I mean,
it gives people kind of, as Austin was saying, from outside a perspective on what exactly is going on in this state that has produced so many leaders at the national level, too. And what are the implications of this political culture that exists in Illinois, but then has been exported?
No, absolutely. I totally agree. You know, it's surprising. I mean, I don't feel, I'm originally, I'm an LA producer, and I see corruption on many levels, but usually there is the laws that have been broken. And you look at this kind of corruption, what interests me was the fact that, you know, these aren't even considered illegal. It's guidelines, or, you know, as we've been told, they're guidelines and they're rules, but they're not laws that are broken. But in any other industry, this would be considered criminal.
So walk us through the documentary. It tracks back to Madigan's start in politics and then how he amassed power over the decades.
So the first thing we wanted to do was really talk about Illinois politics. So we really wanted to give a little bit of history and insight into that, because I think that sort of breeds into, kind of folds into Madigan's rise to power. And we thought it was important to start there and then start to go back into his background from how he, you know, got into politics and came up through Daley, and, you know, how he lost 2 years in the seat and came back stronger than ever. We really wanted to look at all those different also scandals that, you know, he was involved in, whether it was Blago or the Metro scandal, and then also to talk about patronage hiring, which was also something we felt was essential. The important thing for us was to find a way to be informative, to really have the average citizen understand a lot about this guy, and also to be in a position to see how that actually has an effect on individuals, from voters who are paying taxes and are in position right now, whether it's their property taxes or things that people are leaving Illinois.
Taryn, could you talk a little bit about, I think something, one of the most important things that comes across in the film, as you said, it's, I think it's a very informative film. It's educational. People who watch it who don't know anything about Illinois politics, by the end, I think, will be experts and will be interested in learning more. Could you talk about...
So
the fear, I think one of the most important things that comes across is the culture of fear in Illinois politics. Fear and favoritism, I think, are two of the biggest themes in this. Could you talk about actually going through the steps of making this documentary? Did you guys experience that fear firsthand? What were the interview subjects like? Did they fear for blowback from the speaker? I talked about production houses earlier not wanting to take this project for fear of retribution. Is that something you experienced in the course of making this?
I heard a lot. So the people that we interviewed were very upfront about the fact, not for themselves, to be very honest, a lot of the people we interviewed, except for one, individual, more people were, though, very clear with us that people are afraid of retribution. And when I say this, I'm talking about the higher end interviews that we got from, you know, ex-senators or people that were in the House that are now former, you know, they are willing to talk, or reporters. But we did have a patronage worker who was in fear. When it came to the citizens or people like that, they were very afraid to be on camera. So we had a very hard time, and we only found one individual who was willing to speak to us as long as we kept him anonymous. And people in these districts, on the other hand, were extremely effusive about how great and wonderful, because they're working. And, you know, they're working through the patronage system. So it depends on who you are talking to. But we didn't get people who are currently in the House, because nobody's going to speak to us on that level. We spoke to people who have, you know, that have had the experience and understand what it's like, and it went through, you know, the process if you do go against Madigan in the system.
Can you give us a depth on the scope of the interview subjects that did agree to sit down, in terms of partisan affiliation and levels of government service, that those sorts of things?
You know, we wanted to make sure that this was across the board fair. So we got Democrats and Republicans. I thought it was very important that we made sure that this film represented across the board opinions from everybody. So, you know, we were very much clear about this. We got Emile Jones. We got Dick Simpson. They're Democrats. You know, we talked to Rauschenberger. We talked to Jason Gonzalez. I mean, obviously, they've had very direct, affiliation, and are Republicans. And the thing that we really wanted to make certain is the people that we were talking to had a direct affiliation with Madigan, whether they knew him or, you know, were in the House. they needed to be people who could speak directly, not hearsay, and that was very important. The only people that we talked to who we wanted to get a much more nonpartisan were some reporters. We thought that was also essential. We try to keep this very fair and even-handed. But even if you do that, in the case of Madigan, what you find is that everybody is very aware of how corrupt the system is. It's just accepted.
All right. She is Taryn Fogel. She's one of the producers of the forthcoming Madigan documentary, Madigan, Power, Privilege, Politics. Taryn, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a little other footnote here. You can join us for a screening of the Madigan documentary that was just mentioned at Freedom Summit, which is sponsored by AM 560 Chicago, and the program that I co-host in the mornings on AM 560 Chicago's Morning Answer. That's at Freedom Summit. That'll be on October 29th in Itasca, at the Westin in Itasca. And you can go to freedomsummitchicago.com for more details on that.
We now return to Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute, the radio show discussing the honest truth about Illinois policy and politics. Here's Dan Proft.
Dan Proft back with Austin Berg, writer for the Illinois Policy Institute. And Austin, we were talking about this forthcoming Madigan documentary, Madigan, Power, Privilege, Politics, that was commissioned by the Illinois Policy Action, produced by documentarians at a company called Emergent Order. And a lot of interesting subjects that sat down and agreed to be interviewed for this documentary. Perhaps one of the most interesting is the brother of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. He is Rob Blagojevich, and Rob Blagojevich joins us now. Rob, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure. Good morning.
I should mention also, Rob is also the author of a book, Fundraiser A, My Fight for Freedom and Justice. Robbie, so you sat down to discuss Mike Madigan and your experience as somebody who came from outside of Illinois and outside of Illinois' political culture and came here to help your brother when he was running for re-election for a time, and so had interactions not just with the culture but with the principles of it, starting with House Speaker Mike Madigan. And I wonder if you could share some bits and pieces of that experience with Mike Madigan during your time in Illinois.
Sure. I mean, as I mentioned earlier in the documentary, that I had very little exposure to Speaker Madigan. One was at the Democrat Day and at the State Fair, probably in 2005, 2006, somewhere in there. And my brother introduced me to him, and I was very impressed by what he said to me. He said, "Well, how's Alex? I understand he's a baseball player." My son Alex was playing college baseball. He remembered that little bit of detail that my brother told him, I'm sure, sometime earlier, that he remembered to share with me. So I was impressed. First impression, very impressed by him. And then from then on, I had no interaction with him, but that first encounter was a very positive one.
And it's worth noting, just by way of a historical record, Mike Madigan was the campaign co-chairman of your brother's reelection campaign in 2006.
That's accurate, yes.
Rob,
yes.
What did you think, as House Speaker, as someone who's had such a powerful reign over Illinois for a long time, what about Madigan as a political actor, as a pure politician, what makes him so good at getting his members reelected, at wielding control over every aspect of the legislative process? What makes him so good?
You know, I have done a lot of public speaking, promoting my book, and I've been asked that question by people in Illinois, what I thought of Michael Madigan, and my answer really was very succinct. He's really the governor of the state. You may think you're electing governors here, but my assessment is that he's really the governor, and I base that on the 30-some years he's been speaker, the fact that he's a prolific fundraiser and is able to channel campaign funds to candidates in districts that will ultimately lead to a position in the state legislature, that those people will be somewhat beholden to him on future votes. And then I also further learned while I was there, and I was very surprised by this, that there are 50 or so committees in the structure of the legislature, all headed by people, mostly, I think all people, that were selected by Speaker Madigan. and they all get a stipend for being committee chairs. And so it is pretty transparent for a guy on the outside looking in and kind of knowing what I know, that these people are not free to vote for the will of the public. They vote to continue to get campaign funds from the speaker, and they vote to retain their chairmanships, and they vote to stay in his good graces. In my view, given that you got over, you know, a push into $7.8 billion deficit in the state of Illinois to the detriment of the people that they represent. So those would be my quick observations as an outsider.
And when you were here, I mean, even though you may not have had a lot of direct interaction with Mike Madigan, did you see evidence of his you know, kind of hand behind the scenes at work, whether it's emissaries for Madigan or, I mean, I remember your brother when he was governor, he had some moments of friction with Attorney General Lisa Madigan, Mike Madigan's daughter, and I know Mike Madigan is very protective of her. I wonder if you saw kind of other instances of Madigan's work at play, even if he wasn't explicitly directing it, even if you weren't physically interacting with him.
Yeah, I wish I could give you an anecdote on that, but I really don't have one. I can say this, though. I know my brother was having problems with the speaker, you know, fairly well into his first term, and I said to him fairly logically, I thought, well, why don't you just go sit down with Madigan and talk to him? And my brother's response was, you don't understand. You don't know anything here. That's just not going to work for me. And so I found that to be an interesting observation. I didn't begin with my brother, but whatever friction was there with them, my observation is that it was there fairly early on. And, you know, Madigan was pulling the strings. I mean, my brother really couldn't get anything done that he wanted to without, you know, using an executive order. So I know he was frustrated.
Rob, you made a really important point about committee chairs. I just want to echo the most important of those being the Rules Committee, which is chaired by Barbara Flynn Curry, who's been the right-hand woman of Madigan for decades. And that committee essentially serves as the traffic cop in Illinois. If a legislator tries to move a bill, it goes straight to Rules, and Rules can decide where that goes, or it can just sit on it until it dies. And that's happened to property tax reform. There's been nearly 100 property tax reform bills killed in that committee in this General Assembly alone. It kills term limits, it kills redistricting reform, and it kills everything that threatens his power. Beyond that, though, Rob, I think beyond the nuts and bolts of the legislative process, there is a culture that we've been talking about throughout this program. There's a culture of fear in Illinois surrounding politics that is unlike any other state. And I'm wondering, where do you place accountability for that culture? Who's to blame for that?
You know, I blame the voters. I blame us. And a lot of what I mean by that is there's a lot of self-interest that's wrapped up into why you vote for someone. And so if you're in a district, a Democratic district that Madigan has control over, you're going to work for that legislator because you're going to want to get whatever favors might come from being in good graces with that person, whether it's, you know, whatever those services might be. And if you're not in those good graces, then you're either going to be ignored or there'll be some potential retribution of some sort, large or small. I don't know. But I totally agree that there is that fear. And until voters stop voting for parochial self-interest and vote for the greater good of the state, which to me has been completely dismissed over these decades of elections, it's not going to change. Unfortunately, it's not going to change. And I even saw how the patronage system worked in Chicago growing up. I mean, you've got people who will go work for an alderman, and I don't think this is any different for legislators. They'll go knock on doors. They'll bring out the vote, and they'll expect to get a job, or they'll expect some kind of favorable consideration from the local politicians. And it is truly ingrained in the culture there. And until people can transcend their own individual self-interest by doing those things and voting for what's best for everybody, it's just not going to change, I don't think.
We're talking to Rob Blagojevich, brother of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. And Rob, we started this interview and you said, you know, your first interaction meeting Mike Madigan at the state fair was remembered a factoid about your family, about your son playing college baseball. And so you're impressed with him, you know, having that command of the facts, somebody who's never met. I wonder what your impression is after that experience in Illinois and Illinois politics, after going through a federal trial, and now several years later, reflecting on all that transpired, what your impression of Mike Madigan is now?
I mean, I marvel at his ability to stay in power and how he has manufactured a legislative process that he controls like a puppet master. I mean, the guy worked out over 3 decades of manipulation and slow plotting and planning to get to the position that he's in. And so I got to tip my hat to him. Do I think that's right? Do I think it's best for the state of Illinois? No, I don't. But he was allowed to do that. And the people who allowed him to do that are the voters of Illinois. And, you know, until that awakening occurs, he's going to remain in power as long as he chooses to and do whatever he chooses to and, you know, run large deficits and, you know, favor those people who have supported him and his programs and agendas.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you. We get the representation we deserve. I believe that in Illinois and generally speaking. Rob, can you hold on for just a second, just a quick break, and we'll be right back with you?
Sure.
All right. We're talking to Rob Blagojevich. He's the author of the book Fundraiser A, My Fight for Freedom and Justice, the brother of imprisoned former Governor Rod Blagojevich. And we'll revisit these topics with him right after this.
Now, more of Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute, the only show directly addressing the problems and solutions for Illinois. Now, here's Dan Proft.
Dan Proft back with Austin Berg, writer for the Illinois Policy Institute, and we're pleased to continue to be joined by Rob Blagojevich. He is the brother of Rod Blagojevich, former Illinois governor, of course, and he's also the author of the book Fundraiser A, My Fight for Freedom and Justice. Rob, we were talking about Mike Madigan. You were interviewed for this forthcoming Madigan documentary that's going to be released mid-October. And I just wonder, as somebody who was living the governorship of your brother in his first term from out of state and then came in from out of state to participate in that. And then, of course, everything that transpired that people are familiar with and your brother sitting in prison. I wonder how you understood Illinois politics from what your brother was telling you before you got here, and how you understand it, generally speaking, even beyond Madigan, after your personal experience for those several years.
You know, I would say on the onset, not very aware, even to the point of being naive as to what to expect. When I did agree to fundraise for my brother for 4 months, from August to December of 2008, I was briefed by his legal counsel about people coming to me wanting something in exchange, governmental action in exchange for a campaign contribution, which I was, you know, pretty much prepared for and expected that might happen and knew that it was improper. But I was really, and I even testified to this in federal court, how surprisingly frequent those requests by people came up for something in exchange for a contribution. And I was very comfortable in my position, first as a fundraiser, telling them no, ethically, that nothing was going to transpire, but also even when I was indicted, shockingly indicted, for doing things that were improper, when I knew clearly that I had not crossed any lines of fundraising or even trying to trade Barack Obama's Senate seat to the highest bidder. And so I was naive to the political climate. I was naive to the legal climate. And my book that you've mentioned, and I appreciate that, is a cautionary tale really for any citizen who gets involved in politics to go in with their eyes wide open, because you just don't know where the political agenda may be coming from, whether it be local or federal. It's the federal level that I worry most about, because that's who attacked me, an innocent man, and turned my life upside down. And so I'm no longer that naive person. I'm a cynical, wary citizen who takes every opportunity to speak about what happened to him, because it could happen to anybody if it happened to me.
And I think one of the things that's important about what you're saying, you're kind of getting around it, but I want to get right to it, is this idea that Mike Madigan may be one of the principals of the culture that pervades Illinois, but if Mike Madigan went away tomorrow, would the political culture change? And the answer to me, as somebody who has been immersed in it for the last 20 plus years, is no, it wouldn't. And it seems to me what you're describing to your very brief time as a fundraiser for your brother and all the people that ran at you to do things that were illicit is that even if Mike Madigan, there may be somebody who's less effective than Mike Madigan who follows him, but if he went away, that doesn't mean that Illinois all of a sudden becomes this pristine state as in terms of its politics.
And I would have to agree with that. I mean, to me, there are only two things that can change the climate. One, the people no longer vote for their own parochial self-interest, but vote for the greater good, and also figure out how to get term limits. And I know that has been blocked over and over again, but the only real protection I believe we have, whether at the state level or for sure at the federal level, are term limits for these legislators who make a living playing off a system that is juiced by our tax dollars and by large lobbying money. And until that happens, I don't think there'll be any structural change in either Illinois or anywhere in the country.
Illinois is one of only 14 states without term limits, just as a note. And Rob, you were talking about voter accountability before, because Madigan loves to make this argument, well, I do believe in term limits as administered by the voters. He also puts the onus on the voters for this problem. But in Illinois, we have a system where politicians pick their voters through gerrymandering. So there's only so much accountability that there can be there. I believe 60% of the races coming this November are going to be uncontested. Those people get a free pass to the state house. I certainly do agree with the fact your comment on culture, and we do touch on that in the film, and I think one of the most important takeaways from the film is that Madigan grew up in this Chicago culture, as you said, where patronage is the norm. And Madigan grew up in that, and you see actually an interview with him as part of the oral history of the first Mayor Daley, where he said, I wanted to be a ward committeeman because everyone knew that's where the patronage jobs were. And once I got there, all those people became foot soldiers for the Democratic Party. And I think that culture, as Dan said, is pervasive with or without Madigan. There are legions of people coming up in that system as we speak.
All right. He is Rob Blagojevich, who left Illinois for Nashville, like so many Illinoisans. And Rob is the author of the book Fundraiser A, My Fight for Freedom and Justice. Rob, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Now, more stories, insights, and analysis of Illinois policy and politics. This is Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute. Once again, your host, Dan Proft.
Dan Proft back with Austin Berg, writer for the Illinois Policy Institute. You can catch my act Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. on AM 560, Chicago's Morning Answer with Amy Jacobson. And news this week from CTU, Chicago Teachers Union Austin. They've set a strike date of October 11th. They're tired of this chip between themselves and the Chicago Public School Administration, and they want a contract. They want it now, and they want it on their terms. And 95% of Chicago public school teachers voted to authorize a strike in the near term if their demands are not met.
I think the important part about this is that it's just another example of CTU existing in a completely different reality than the rest of the state and the rest of the city. First off, this 95% strike vote, it wasn't on a secret ballot. So the intimidation inherent in that is disgusting. And the reason they said they didn't do a secret ballot is because it costs too much to operate that system, which is the first time I've ever heard the CTU have any cost consideration about anything. Just happened to be when they could figure out which members of theirs they could intimidate after this vote.
Yeah, it is worth pointing out, though, that a few years ago when they actually did strike and they did do a secret ballot, they got about the same percentage. So I think the secret ballot is a fair point, and intimidation on the margins with some teachers who probably felt compelled to go along who wouldn't have otherwise if there was a secret ballot. But the bottom line, and this is what I always say about the Chicago Teachers Union, everybody focuses on Karen Lewis and her very proud advocacy for her socialist agenda. But the real thing that's frightening is not Karen Lewis. It's 95% of 30,000 teachers that go along with it.
And I'd like to mention, I mean, this strike, to be clear, the April 1st strike, by the way, the motivations, even on CTU's part, were unclear. Like, Chicago residents didn't know why they were striking because CTU changed this position a few times. This time, The reason is a quote-unquote fair contract. What that means is they're angry that CPS is finally making them pick up their pension contribution. So on one hand, you have Chicago residents who just endured the largest property tax hike in modern city history. They're about to get a water sewer tax hike. Nearly all of that money will be going to pensions. And yet you have a select group of people in the CTU saying that it's unfair that they have to pay taxes, pay more out of their paychecks to pay for these pensions. And they're willing to completely disrupt the lives of school children and families in Chicago because of that.
And remember, Illinois Policy Institute has run the numbers. You're talking about the average CPS teacher retiring today with 30 years in will have put about 140 grand into the system, expects to receive, if they live to average life expectancy, to recoup 2.1 million out. That is a rate of return that is better than the private sector by about a factor of 10 in terms of contribution versus payout.
And by the way, these are the highest paid teachers of any urban school district in the United States.
Correct. And so here's the other thing. Story on Chicago City Wire, chicagocitywire.com this week. It's also interesting. Talking about the money they don't have. By the way, after this strike date was set, Moody's immediately downgraded CPS debt. It's already junk status. They kind of went further into junk land. But then there's the story about the money they did get that they perhaps shouldn't have. There was a Tribune story about CPS enrollment decline by 3-4%, but that's not the real story. The real story, the Chicago City Wire, which is an outlet that I control, in the interest of full disclosure, but we did a look at 68 CPS high schools. 68. The district told the Illinois State Board of Education it had 10% more students than the district reported to local media. So they're offering two different numbers. Why is this important? Because the amount of state and federal aid CPS receives is predicated on their average daily attendance. In other words, their enrollment, the number of students at these schools. And the difference of approximately 7,000 students in just these 68 CPS high schools, which is a fraction of the district, translates into a difference of $312 million that they did receive that perhaps they shouldn't have, as high schools on the west and south sides are completely abandoned. I mean, you have high schools that 25 years ago had 2,000 students, and that's the capacity for which they were built, that today have 200, places like Fenger and CVS. And CPS, so don't believe this is just a teachers union problem. It's also an administration problem and a city government problem. And CPS and City Hall and Tiny Dancer don't want to do anything about this. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars potentially in taxpayer fraud.
I'm imagining myself as a young teacher just getting out of college somewhere in the Midwest. Why on earth? You can talk about these high pay and benefits in CTU and in CPS, but the fact is those are mostly legacy costs. These new teachers are entering into a tier two system where they're paying way more for this overpromising. Why would you? And the point of that is that the system is only going to get worse, because how are you going to attract talent to the system? You can't. And it just is another way to show this union is totally divorced from the concerns of everyday families. They're divorced from the concerns of younger teachers just entering the system. They're divorced from the concerns from taxpayers as well.
Yeah, but what they know from prior experience is that they can bully Tiny Dancer and City Hall and the City Council into submission to their demands. And we'll see, I guess, in the coming weeks if they do it once again.
Restoring Illinois to greatness. This is Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute and hosted by Dan Prof.
Dan Prof back with Austin Berg, writer for the Illinois Policy Institute. And Austin, a rare victory for equal treatment before the law this week in Illinois, where a federal judge held that the two-tiered system of same-day voter registration in Illinois that was advanced on a party-line vote by Democrats in Springfield it should be stayed. And now the Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan is going to appeal that to the Seventh Circuit. So we should hear, they should receive an expedited appeal. We should get a dispensation on this in short order as early voting in Illinois began this week. But this is important because you had some counties where there was same day voting registration at the polling place in every polling place, and other counties where it was just centrally located, not every polling place. And that disparity was found to be problematic, at least according to one federal judge.
Yeah, I would say that this is a case study in Illinois' freakish outlierness and compared to the rest of the nation. But the judge actually ruled correctly, surprisingly, yeah. Unlike, you know, something like Fair Maps or something like that, where it just goes with status quo no matter what the demand of the public is. In this case, you saw House Democrats, House and Senate Democrats pass a bill in the waning days of the Quinn administration that developed this two-tiered system, one for counties more than 100,000 people, one for counties of less than 100,000 people.
So 20 counties and 82 counties.
Right.
And 20 counties in the one bucket and 82 in the other.
It's worth noting, I talk about an outlier. That's the only time that's ever been done. No state does it like that. And all you have all these people coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, voter access is good, all this. And that's fine. But if you want it, give it to everybody, right? And that's what you see in even our Iowa has that. Wisconsin has that. Illinois decided for partisan reasons, clearly based on the party line vote of that bill, that we were going to be different.
And based on putting the 20 counties in one basket and the 82 counties in the other basket, saying those smaller counties didn't have the resources to administer same-day voter registration at every polling places, and the big counties do. Well, here's a newsflash. Some of the big counties are in a lot worse financial shape than some of the small counties, so that's just a silly argument. What it really was about, because there's been studies done about this, is that same-day voter registration at every polling place drives up turnout by as much as 12%. And so what Democrats really wanted to do is in their base counties, you know, those that lean Democrat, they want to drive turnout. And in those counties that lean Republican, they don't want to drive turnout. Pretty simple. And so the argument that was made by Liberty Justice Center, which is an adjunct of the Illinois Policy Institute, is, hey, look, if you want same day voter registration at the polling place, every polling place, fine, do it in all 102 counties. And if you don't, fine, do it in all 102 counties. So it's a pretty simple argument. The logic is so compelling. Even the Sun-Times editorial board, which is populated mostly by red diaper babies, had to come to terms with the federal judge's holding in the case.
And I love the financial argument, too, as if Cook County is in a shape to spend a bunch of money making these polling places.
Yeah.
And another point, which I think is important, especially for people who are in favor of more voter access, is that this presidential election, there will be more access to registration than at any other point in Illinois history, because there was a law passed that said, at least at a central polling place in each county, you have to have same day voter registration. That's never happened before. So we're going to see higher access than at any other point in Illinois history.
You know, I just wish the Democrats, Chicago Democrats in charge of this state, would stop being cute about it. Why not just run a bill and pass it and override the governor's veto that just says Democrats shall be elected in all legislative districts for all state and federal offices? And we could just dispense with all of the expense and the annoyance and the time and trouble of these pesky elections that are the foundation of a representative republic. We can just get rid of representative democracy in Illinois because it's just so burdensome, particularly on small counties.